We are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep.
Dissonance.
Rise up, dissonance. Create dissonance. Be a dissident.
I can't be dissident, man. I'm too busy dancing.
Too busy discoing.
Oh,
welcome
yeah.
to another edition of Precognitive Dissonance. I can't say it. yeah, that was my retarded voice. No offense to retarded people everywhere.
What are they challenged? Intellectually challenged? That could define most of the human race, Miles.
Perceptually challenged?
Traveled? I don't know. I'm sure there's a correct term.
Well, maybe they're all messed up in the head because they sucked on toys from China with date rape drugs smeared all over them.
As if mine brain-damaging lead paint weren't bad enough, now comes a story that, and the appropriately titled Aquadots, which sounds to me like...
Microdots, man!
it's a brand of acid, yes!
Wow. Yeah, this headline, this may not be CNN's headline, but toy contaminated with date rape drug pulled. New York. U.S. safety officials have recalled about 4.2 million Chinese-made Aquadots bead toys that contain a chemical that has caused some children to vomit and become comatose after swallowing them. Bindis, which were named Australia's Toy of the Year, contain a chemical that converts into a date rape drug. Scientists have found the popular toy's coating contains a chemical that, once metabolized, converts into the toxic date rape drug GHB, or gamma-hydroxybutyrate. Butyrate. U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission spokesman Scott Wilson told CNN, "Well, Scott Wilson, I got something to tell you. GHB ain't for kids, but it ain't toxic if you use it correctly, okay?"
Well, we're also talking about, you know, the sort of child that would swallow something like this is probably between
the age of
2 and 5. And, you know, you just don't give kids
absolutely
potent drugs.
Give them some window pane. Oh, wait, I mean, I was going to say window paint chips.
God, I hope my wife never hears this.
Lead-based. No, you should never give your children any of those things. Of course. Come on, have some common sense, folks.
But this is yet another contaminated toys from China scandal. I had a friend musing today that maybe this will be what finally brings Walmart down. Oh,
one
that's a good laugh.
That would be so rocking. This article does go on to say, quote, GHB is this drug that in low doses actually causes euphoria, said Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. In higher doses, it can cause people to go into a coma. It can cause seizures. It can cause something known as hypotonia, where all your muscles just become very flaccid. So, you figure it out, folks.
That's why it's for the ladies. I'm going to eat a turd in hell for that one. On a more directly precognitive note, I as you know, usually stop by Burger King on my way here because it's about an hour's drive, depending on traffic. And, yes, I eat in my car. But anyway, every now and again, I like to pick up kids' meals toys because they're cheap, they're fun, and they're frequently entertaining. And although these days I can watch about 5 minutes of SpongeBob SquarePants, I had to pick up the Atlantis SquarePants, part of a 12-figure series, something soaked in myth. These are SpongeBob SquarePants figures that correspond to popular mythology, I suppose. There's a...
As opposed to historic...
Well, there's a Lemurian SpongeBob.
Woo-hoo!
There's a Davy Jones locker SpongeBob. There's a squid something SpongeBob. I ought to remember that it's like a Latin suffix, but anyway. I thought this would be kind of... these toys are for ages 3 and up, by the way, as it says on the instructions. I'm opening the dangerous plastic bag right now.
Yeah, don't put that over your head. Wait.
You'd
have a hard time with that, I know.
And, well, the reason I wanted to open it up is because it's got mysterious myths revealed inside.
Live.
I don't know what this thing is actually.
What's in the vault that Hoffa kept? It's an Atlantis SpongeBob SquarePants.
Probably just an empty Coke can like they found in, who was it?
It's Geraldo.
Yeah, but, a welcome to Lemuria postcard. And a handy, you can collect all 12 SpongeBob toys. And the print is too fine for my aging eyes to read. This is Spongy Lemuria, actually. Apparently the whole thing is Atlantis SquarePants. But, and that's a scenic poster. But maybe Miles can make the fine print on the rest of the figures.
I'm putting my reading glasses on. Lemuria! A mythical continent said to have existed in the Indian Ocean was home to tree-hopping furry creatures known in present day as lemurs. Legend has it that Lemuria was a mass of land bridges connecting India, South America, Africa, and Australia. As with Atlantis, the days of Lemuria came to an end after a natural disaster sunk it into the sea. Today,
lemurs. Lemurs, dude.
Today, lemurs populate both Madagascar and Southeast Asia. Is this a result of the mythical land bridges of Lemuria? Now, if only someone could explain the presence of fire in Bikini Bottom. Ha, ha, ha. You know...
Well, it's because it's a cartoon, and cartoons routinely violate the laws of physics. Or, as Bugs Bunny once observed, yeah, I know it violates the law of gravity, but I never studied law.
And I see now that this is all an advertising marketing campaign for Atlantis Paradise Island in the Bahamas. It's an actual resort they're trying to market it to, which makes perfect sense considering how many parents and quote-unquote adults are into this thing. And on the subject of lemurs and strange phenomena, cricket sounds. seriously. In Ellen Crystal's... Silent Invasion. Invasion!
Gotta go, folks. Lemurs are coming over the walls.
Actually, they're coming out of the walls.
Well,
in Silent Invasion by Ellen
Crystal. But you better share
it. Those aquadots. They're getting into my bloodstream. Ellen Crystal in Silent Invasion talked about the things that she was photographing in and around Pine Bush, New York, that she believed were alien spacecraft that were actually going in and out of the ground and flying about and taking photographs of them and going, ooh, look, don't you see the gray alien with the wraparound eyes in that picture there? Don't you? Don't you see it? Right there? You look, no, look, right here.
Like the bullet wounds on the back of the Patterson Bigfoot?
Yeah, that's scar tissue. That's from that encounter she had 2 days earlier at that, that logging trail. No, but seriously, the Ellen Crystal talked about in her book Silent Invasion, and I don't know what other cases she's referring to, but she said that there were lots of cases of abductions where people saw on the craft or on the planet or realm that they were taken to lemurs or things that were like hybrid lemurs. And of course that also, it made me think of Out of Place Animals and cryptozoology. Yeah. And
well, that's, you know, it's one of those in this simple little, brochure with the toy, that's pretty much Churchward's, Lemuria in a nutshell. Now geographically, of course, there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever for any kind of supercontinent in the Indian Ocean or the Pacific Ocean.
But yet we've reported on this show that there's been all kinds of new discoveries of habitations off the coasts of the current coastlines of different continents around the planet that indicate that, you know, there have always been civilizations near water's edge. It's just that water's edge may have been significantly different.
Oh, yeah. Now that it is, you know, it's like the business about the biblical flood actually representing a rapid rise in the level of, I think, the Black Sea in Central Asia. There have been a couple of fairly ancient sites unearthed actually underwater off the coast of the Black Sea in recent years. I'd have to do a little bit more searching.
That sounds like some of the ones we've talked about. Well, check out. I'm going to run through some of these headlines and then we can go back to them individually. But man, this is great. We got a news station, KXII, First 12 in Texas, doing a series, The Hunt for Bigfoot. Some great new articles over at ForgetOmori.com, including one on the South Atlantic Anomaly around the Brazil area of South America. And this thing, archaeologists have discovered the world's oldest inscription in Giraffe.
Kind of hoping you'd get to that.
And as well as peering into the heart of a black hole.
Ooh, marvelous illustration.
Twitching illness hits several students, staff at Virginia School. And tourism cashes in on the dark side. And since you've wanted to talk about crypto tourism and ghost tourism, we could touch on that. And something that mentions an Austin, Texas individual who apparently suffers from something that sounds like sleep paralysis.
I caught the name of Lindsay Harlan a little earlier today. Didn't actually look the source for it, but whatever original... I'm trying to remember what linked to this.
Probably The Anomalist. I think that's where I found that particular one.
Well, I know I didn't get quite that far, but demonic possession and how to drive them off.
I hadn't gotten to the demonic possession part. It's just the opening part that I read sounded like classic sleep paralysis.
Maybe not possession so much as harassment.
Yeah.
Damn poltergeist.
Not quite a haunting, not quite a poltergeist, but some kind of demonic hovering shadow thing. And this is actually from a blog called From the Shadows, and it's available online at from-the-shadows.blogspot.com by Jason Offutt. And the title of this Wednesday, November 7th article is A Shadow in the Night, and it starts by saying, Lindsay Harlan of Austin, Texas, often wrestles with sleep. One night in the spring of her senior year in high school, the math education major at Austin Community College awoke to find something dark, something cloaked in shadows. And it goes on, she's describing being asleep and just woke up for no reason. There was a huge, tall, black figure standing on the side of the bed. Sound familiar, folks?
Mm-hmm.
Its legs were all the way to the ceiling, and it was staring down at me with two beady, shiny eyes.
A little bit different. The first thing that popped into my head was John Keel's chapter on bedroom invaders in Strange Creatures from
Right.
Planet
I guess,
Space.
I guess you there. We should differentiate that there, since I'm often quick to forget that there are a wide variety of these bedroom visitation entities, from the old hag or the demon and incubi, succubi that might sometimes sit on whatever, these different entities that sit on the chest and cause the sense of paralysis or the sense of suffocation.
To characters like the Grinning Man, who is exactly as described, a smirking, ordinary-looking individual in sometimes a checked sport coat, if I remember rightly. But, definitely somebody who shouldn't be in your bedroom at 3 o'clock in the morning.
But apparently they should.
Well,
I
they
mean,
are.
So often, apparently, these things are in our bedrooms. Obviously, they should be there. They're just a normal part of it. It's nothing paranormal at all. I can say that, not being a victim of this. I have actually experienced what basically I think was sleep paralysis, and it had all the paralysis, you know, and yet I felt, you know, I was conscious in my bed and unable to move, but it was really tough, and I was slowly, I think, breaking the physical paralysis by trying to move different parts.
I've experienced something similar
But this was there was also that, in this case, that sense of some kind of a foreboding presence. In my case, not necessarily a specific visage of a vision of an entity or perception of an entity, but just that sense that something really bad and dangerous was afoot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's over at From the Shadows.
There was also a bit in there. This was the daughter, and apparently the mother had experienced... Ah, yes. Do you really think it's death? Lindsay found her mother spoke from experience. Her mother confessed that as a child, she experienced something dark and sinister knocking at her door. Quote, when she was younger, she shared a room with her sister, and while she was laying in her bed, she kept hearing this noise coming from the living room like footsteps, Lindsay said. Footsteps moved through the living room and kitchen before marching down the hallway to her bedroom door. As these footsteps grew louder, she said that she could barely breathe, Lindsay said, and it started getting really cold, and she had become really scared for her and her sister.
Wow. Spooky scary.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, we touched just briefly on Bigfoot at the start of the hour, and you also mentioned Forget-A-Maury in passing. That South Atlantic anomaly, by the way, is a peculiarity of the Van Allen radiation belts. The South Atlantic anomaly is the place on Earth where the Van Allen radiation belts come closest to the surface of the planet. And it actually has a number of, I suppose, social and economic effects. Obviously, it affects communication over the area. Satellite failures are much more common in this stronger radiation zone. It also affects satellites with humans inside, like the International Space Station. Light flashes, thought to be produced by radiation directly stimulating the retina of astronauts, are reportedly more common when they are flying through the zone.
I was unaware of this anomaly until on some other forum. I was reading people talking about the Brazilian UFO zone where we've talked about before, where people were zapped and harassed, and a whole town was witnessing this, and the military observed it and took hundreds and thousands of photographs and film footage and whatnot.
Chupa chupas.
And one of the persons in the forum mentioned that coincidentally this is also the area over which this anomaly occurs. Is there a connection? Weaker, thinner veil between our dimension and theirs? I don't know.
That's a good question. Oh, dagnabbit, I meant to grab and bring along. Only tangentially related, we touch on the relationship of pop culture to various aspects of anomaly research, and I ran across a book last time I went to the used bookstore called Stations of the Nightmare by Philip Jose Farmer. Farmer is something of a minor celebrity in science fiction writing. He was one of the first science fiction writers to openly tackle sexual themes. I can't recall the name of his most notorious work in that regard, but Stations of the Nightmare was one of those books that I had actually read the first section of it when it was serialized in what I thought was a series called Weird Heroes, a.k.a. The New Pulp, which was a paperback series that started showing up in the mid-70s. But anyway, Stations of the Nightmare concerns a man who is infected by and turns into a flying saucer.
What?
with Christ-like powers. He basically heals people that come into proximity with him. And no one virtually anywhere on the planet can pose any kind of physical threat to him without simply dropping dead. It's not a great book. It's a read interesting more for its ideas. The character is someone who, you're told, makes a kind of spiritual transformation, but you don't really see a whole lot of evidence of it. He starts off as a fairly, not disagreeable so much as forgettable. He's a 54-year-old mechanic who happens to have not a friend, but an acquaintance who doesn't really like all that much, but their wives are friends, who's a science fiction writer who explains a lot of stuff to him. But it was interesting to stumble across the complete form of this thing, the bookstore, and finally get around to reading it probably over 20 years after I read the first chapter of it.
It sounds like a very interesting premise. Just looking up online, it looks like it was copyright 1982, or maybe that was when it was published.
Mm.
Pretty interesting.
That sounds about right. As I want to say it was about 81 or 80 that I read the original serial.
Well, jumping back to cryptozoology and Texas. Like I said, Paris, Texas reports of a Bigfoot sighting in Atoka. I love that. Atoka. Atoka County surfaced in 2006. And you saw the story here on First News, but nothing much came of that sighting. Now rumors of Bigfoot's return have surfaced in the woods outside Paris, Texas. So we sent Daniel Gotera to try and find out if the creature is fact or fiction. So there is a video that accompanies this on the website over at kxii.com. Again, the headline is The Hunt for Bigfoot. It's a two-part series that started airing on the 7th, so that looks pretty
and
interesting.
And I think this was...
And look, there's the name... The name that shall not be spoken.
Biscotti. No, Biscotti of the notorious...
Infamous?
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I'm thinking of someone named Moneymaker.
Matt Moneymaker of... I think it's BFRO.
Right. BFRO is the organization that hosts the... conference in Jefferson every year, yes?
No. That's Craig Woolheater and Texas Bigfoot Research Conservancy.
Oh, okay.
And actually, they've got a conference that either just happened or is about to happen, come to think of it.
I know it's every year about this time.
But
anyway, yes, Biscardi is a name that has come up. I've noticed it on Cryptomundo in somewhat less than glowing reports.
Well, he's always involved in sensational. He's always getting the limelight. He's always making the wildest claims, and that tends to get the media's attention.
Yeah.
Coming up, Jefferson, Texas, November 10th, 2007. You can find out more at texasbigfoot.org. This is the, I don't know what year, which one, how many they've done now. It's several since 2001, I think, is the first one. So Texas Bigfoot Conference from the Texas Bigfoot Research Conservancy.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Craig Woolheater blogs with Lauren Coleman over at Cryptomundo.com.
Now, it'll be interesting to see what... there's the speakers list. If you'd scroll down a little bit.
Somebody from Texas Parks and Wildlife.
Gwen Schlitter. Jeffrey Meldrum.
Who we've been hearing about in the news.
And I was wondering if his name or Jimmy Chilcutt's name was going to come up, because... you heard me reference Forget Amore a few minutes ago, and the reason for that is the next most recent post. It's about three back. Dermal Ridges and Casting Artifacts.
From November 3rd.
This is about another post, and it links to it down there in red, Dermal Ridges and Casting Artifacts. By a fellow named Matt Crowley, and yeah, it's Crowley. It's a long article. It's profusely illustrated, and its brief is basically that at least in one fairly celebrated instance, what forensic fingerprint expert Jimmy Chilcutt of the Conroe Police Department interpreted as dermal ridges, which would go a long way towards validating a lot of tracks as those of a genuine unknown primate. Crowley's brief is that these are in fact what are called artifacts of the casting process. That, you know, what you're actually seeing is a result of the way that the casts of the tracks are made. Not genuine evidence of an unknown primate.
I saw Chilcutt give the presentation at the Southern Crypto Conference, the one put on by Texas's other Bigfoot researcher, Chester Moore Jr. And Chilcutt's presentation was pretty convincing. I mean, he's got an amazing reputation in the law enforcement industry for his forensic abilities involving his analysis of handprints, fingerprints, footprints, tracks in general, but particularly anything that's skin related. This seemed like, you know, really, really good evidence that we're dealing with a real phenomena here. And, you know, like any good theory or hypothesis, it needs to be tested rigorously and tested by people who have, you know, an open and skeptical mind and a scientific bent. So I'm glad to hear that there's somebody talking about it. You know, that's the most important thing, even if it's debunking it or calling it into question.
It's one of those, I think I mentioned when I first saw it a couple of days ago that for the first time I'd actually been depressed by looking at Forget-A-Maury.
Oh, yeah.
And after looking over the article, it's one of those, it's an interesting case. It seems to be talking specifically about one or two very famous casts. Whereas my recollection is that Chilcutt, at least, had looked at
several. Yeah.
Across a range of time. You know.
Right. Yeah. That's right. It wasn't just recent cases. It wasn't just cases from one specific region.
Mm-hmm.
He was reaching out to the research community to get access to other good condition, you know.
And something else, it's one of those, there, you know, the author of the piece is fairly upfront about not exactly his prejudices, but his mindset regarding all of this. Apparently, he was, as a child in the late 60s, early 70s, fascinated by Bigfoot, rapidly disenchanted when, you know, nobody managed to put one in a cage, and pretty much abandoned any interest in it for the best part of 25 years. Around 2000 or so, apparently, he came to the realization that, you know, most everything he wanted to find out to get caught up, he could dig up on the internet, and proceeded from there. It'll be interesting to see if his work is taken up, if Chilcutt himself comes forward with any kind of rebuttal. But it's certainly the first serious challenge to... And the thing is, Chilcutt was not the first, I think, to advocate this or to assert this. Meldrum... was actually the researcher that first came forward and said, you know, these tracks show, you know, I could be, you know, and I could be wrong about that. But from the present forward into the past.
This one, next one, is from CAIS News, Archaeological and Cultural News of the Iranian World. Archaeologists have discovered the world's oldest inscription in Giraft. This is from a correspondent in London. Archaeologists have discovered the world's most ancient inscription in the Iranian city of Giraft near the Halil Rud historical site, according to Iran Press TV. Quote, the inscription discovered in a palace was carved on a baked mud brick whose lower left corner has only remained, explained Professor Yusuf Mahid Yadeh, head of the Giraft excavation team. The only ancient inscriptions known to experts before the Giraft discovery were cuneiform and hieroglyph, said Mahid Zadeh, adding that the newfound inscription is formed by geometric shapes, and no linguistic around the world has been able to decipher it yet. Actually, the first thing that I thought of was some of the samples of alleged alien writing from both the Roswell wreckage and just other sources like that Mario Pasolini had collected.
It's one of those The statement of the professor is a little bit that no linguist around the world has been able to decipher it yet. When you have a sample of exactly like four characters, it's going to be a little bit tough.
It's their complete language.
It's the most, I-E-U-A-O.
It's the simplest yet most complex language of ever, of all time on the planet Earth. Probably not. And it really does look pretty. It looks like something. I mean, no offense to ancient humans, but it looks like something a little child would come up with some Play-Doh and a stick.
Well, you know
I mean, it's it's fairly geometric. You know.
Well, what's interesting is that, and it again, it's without a larger sample. It's very difficult to say. And
it's a yellow submarine.
Well, it's also possible that you're looking at a repeating decorative motif. Because what appears at first glance to be four characters might, in fact, on closer inspection, only be two. You have what looks like an X superimposed on a circle.
And a diamond with some... extra lines coming off.
A pair of rabbit ears off top of it, which proves that the ancient Iranians had television.
My God, man, I think you're right.
Yes, well, the Egyptians had to steal them from somebody.
Because we know they never came up with anything on their own.
Yep.
Especially nothing to do with... Oh, never mind. Quantum mechanics, my friend.
Yep. That's what you call when the spaceship breaks down. This is the one I noted in passing, had the lovely illustration earlier. And
it's like a swirled margarita.
It's actually a good simulation of what space might look like in the vicinity of a binary star where one of the companions was a massive black hole. Sirius, I think, is...
X1. Or is it...
It's a giant blue-white star.
That's a great Rush song.
Has this vast funnel of stellar material just whipping off of it and being absorbed by its companion black hole. This article...
Peering into the heart of a black hole, a glimpse beyond the event horizon by Philip Ball. And this is from Nature.com. Quantum mechanics might be capable of stripping bare a black hole to reveal the mysterious and unseeable singularity that exists at its heart, say George Matsis and Andre da Silva of the Sao Paulo State University in Brazil. It has long been suspected that these singularities, where the known laws of physics break down, are always decorously veiled behind the event horizon, a boundary beyond which light cannot escape from the fearsome gravitational pull of a black hole. Theoretically, robots might be able to engineer a rocket ship that could... Oh, wait, that's that Disney movie.
That's not... That's
that Disney movie. I love
I
that
was
movie.
About to say Event Horizon, you know, the Concept and Physics.
Hellraiser
a very
in space.
Bad movie, yes. Oh, God, poor Sam Neill. Anyway, theoretically, nothing within an Event Horizon can ever be perceived or investigated by an outside observer because no light can escape. So the singularities remain insulated from the rest of the universe. This is something that's a little bit of a head-scratcher because I thought it was possible to predict effects within a black hole with the necessary math. But let's read on. This amounts to what, in 1969, physicist Roger Penrose called cosmic censorship, whereby the laws of physics conspire to save us from having to gaze on the unthinkable. According to Einstein's general theory of relativity, in the middle of a black hole, its mass collapses in on itself to form an infinitely small, infinitely dense point, where space-time itself is punctured. Even causality, the relation of a cause and its effect, breaks down, which seemed to defy not only physics but logic. Penrose's motivation seemed to be to preserve the decorum of physics, Matsus says.
Maximilian! Maximilian!
I hate that movie, Miles.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It's bad, but I loved it as a kid.
But physicists have wondered whether event horizons are ever stripped away, leaving these absurdist singularities naked. One possibility, for example, is that the event horizon might vanish if a black hole spins very fast. Light and matter might then be flung out by centrifugal force. In September, physicists Arlie Petters of Duke University in Durham, North Carolina, and Marcus Werner of the University of Cambridge, UK, proposed that singularities stripped naked by fast rotation should be detectable by astronomers because they act as a very strong gravitational lens, bending the light from stars behind them by their distortion of space-time. Petters and Werner say that existing telescopes should have sufficient spatial resolution to spot naked singularities in the center of our own galaxy.
Put something on! You're going to catch a cold.
Let's see. Longish article, so let's just say it's... could be fascinating news. If it leads to true anti-gravity, I'm all for it. Because, by God, I want a flying belt. You know, jetpacks are all well and good, but, you know, without a flying belt, without anti-gravity, you're good for 20 seconds of flight, and, you know, if your fuel runs out 1,000 feet above the ground, you're a rock.
I'm sure they'll invent anti-gravity belts, and they'll probably cause sterility. So we'll kill two birds with one stone.
That's not going to bother me in the slightest, Miles.
We've solved the population problem and managed to give everybody the ability to slam into each other at fast speeds up in the sky.
Can I fly over Westlake with the first one?
Twitching illness hits several students, staff at Virginia school.
Take it, Miles. Roanoke Times, there's a giveaway.
And it's foxnews.com. Vinton, Virginia, a mysterious illness causes an odd twitching symptom has stricken several students and a staff member at a Virginia high school. Testing continues at William Byrd High School in Roanoke County, where students and staff have shown strange symptoms of twitching and spasms since September, but a cause has yet to be determined. About 30 students staged a walkout and protest earlier this week. Woohoo, students! And the school has said about 300 of the students, 1,200 students, have been absent. School officials say they do not plan to close the school. Roanoke County Schools official and health officials have found no environmental cause for the symptoms, which have affected fewer than 10 students, the Associated Press reported. I have seen them in the hallway, and it seems pretty bad. Is this a onion article?
Remember the
it's uncontrollable,
the kind of
twitching
the witchcraft and strange disease panics that have struck
the mysterious other smells of high schools and
I'm thinking this is unusual because it's happening in an American school. Previous reports have been from schools in, I want to say, India and Indonesia. Not quite the same thing, but
something that's convincing the students that somebody's bewitched or possessed or something. And twitching, even though we're not a, or since we're a less superstitious culture, perhaps is not being interpreted as possession in this case. Students and parents met Monday night with officials from the school system, the Virginia Department of Health, and the companies conducting the environmental tests. Parents asked about the symptoms and urged officials to close the school and offer classes elsewhere. But Superintendent Lorraine Lang said that, that health experts said that based on the environmental test results, there's no need to close the school. So far, the illness has sickened several students and a teacher at William Byrd High School, and officials can't specify specific symptoms to watch out for. The article goes on, and this is again at foxnews.com. Twitching illness has hit several student staff at Virginia School. I was just reviewing again the idea of mimetics and the copycat effect. And one of the things that I've been finding is that, yes, mimeticists have very much keyed in on the copycat effect. And in one researcher went so far as to say that it is basically the best, most easily transmitted meme is suicide. I have yet to fully read this commentator's writings to know why he says that, but I think the idea being that the powerfulness of the idea of extinguishing one's own life is the easiest thing to transmit to people. And by transmit with a meme, I mean we're talking about the idea of killing oneself, and so...
Well, you kill yourself, you destroy the world at the same time.
And so many of the murder-suicides that we hear about, like school shootings and other murderous rampages that often end in the person committing suicide or committing suicide by cop, so to speak, that is truly what's at work there, is that wanting to make everything stop. I can't recommend highly enough Lauren Coleman's book, Copycat Effect, which you can also find out more about at copycateffect.com and copycateffect.blogspot.com. And just because we are talking about suicide, you know, if you for any reason are depressed and really at wit's end, there are plenty of resources that you can find online and free phone numbers that you can call to help out. I know we often make light of a lot of the stuff on this show.
Yeah. That's one of those, I think I told you once, one of my earliest memories is my mother being along with her in the car when she went to visit a friend of hers, and I couldn't have been more than 3 or 4 years old. But this was a friend that I had remembered visiting with her previously. And I'm not sure if I realized it at the time, but when we went to visit on this one particular occasion, my mother found her in her garage. She killed herself by simply starting the engine.
Asphyxiation.
Yeah. So that's... Yeah.
I don't think you've ever told me that, man.
Yeah. Much closer to home, something that I almost walked into.
This is just a kind of a strange thing. You know, we talk about a zeitgeist, and we were just talking about the copycat effect. Well, the copycat effect is basically the idea that when suicides are reported in the media, or when certain violent acts are reported in the media, especially if they're handled in certain ways and handled very sensationally, this can trigger more mayhem and more death and more suicide and more murders. And in some cases, more plane crashes, more automobile accidents. And yesterday, the world got news of the school shootings over in Finland. And this was the first event of that kind over there. And strangely enough, something was going down here in Austin, Texas. Now, I work in the downtown area right near the Capitol building, and as does Craig. And When I got it, I hadn't heard anything, but when I got into work today, I looked at my email, and there was a message from state agencies basically saying there's been a sighting of someone with a rifle in the downtown area. Please stay indoors. And I hadn't heard anything, so I looked online and found at least seven or six or so articles, headlines like 9/11 report of possible gunman prompts search near Capitol, standoff with suicide by cop, no suspect found after two reports of gunman downtown, APD clears out second scene of possible gunman, no suspect found, possible gunman on the loose downtown.
And that's the earliest report. That's 23 hours ago, so that would be...
Well, it was actually... I posted this morning, so it would be 8:20, like 30-something hours. But
okay. Well, anyway, I walked through this morning. As you know, I take the bus to work.
Yesterday morning.
This morning.
This is from yesterday.
Was it?
November 7th.
Yesterday?
Today's the Thursday the 8th. That's why, remember, I wasn't here when this happened. I was in Dallas.
Weird.
Or maybe anyway, there were more cops out this morning.
Or I've lost a day. It's a quick miles. Scan me for implants.
You're not into the probing?
No. I don't do probes, Miles. I've got a trunk monkey. Anyway, I got off the bus, and I'd already noticed that there were like three APD cruisers parked between 14th and 12th. One had its lights on, but there were no officers in evidence. Anyway, I get off the corner of 12th and Guadalupe and walk due east towards the library, and a block east is Lavaca, and there's a Capitol policeman with his shotgun on his hip detouring people off of Lavaca, and I looked north and the street is completely bare. I could see what looked like a plainclothesman crouched behind one of the cars. But,
this earliest report is from KXAN.com. No suspect found after two reports of gunmen downtown. Police and DPS troopers found no suspect after investigating reports of a gunman in downtown Austin Wednesday morning. A woman in a downtown office building called 911 about 8:30 a.m. saying there was a gunman at the top of the parking garage at 13th and Lavaca.
Holy shit.
She said the man was wearing dark clothing and carrying a rifle. The garage is located next to the Texas Workforce Commission and Texas State Teachers Association. This is right by where we work.
Yeah, and so, I walk right in front of the Texas State Teachers Association. So it's kind of like they must have already cleared the garage at that point because... I can't, the bus would have gone right by that.
Yeah. State office buildings were locked down while police officers and Department of Public Safety troopers searched the building and found nothing. A police chopper and Starflight also found nothing during a sweep of the area. A coworker of mine this morning said that he saw upwards of like four or five or more helicopters all over the area, and he hadn't heard anything about this. A police chopper and Starflight also found nothing. A second call was received about 11 a.m. saying there was a man with a gun at 5th and Lavaca Streets. Second investigation also turned up no suspect, and police said they don't know if that caller was a copycat. Anybody that's been in Austin and old enough to remember the Tower incident, of course, that's the first thing that comes to your mind, said Willie Chapman of the Texas Trial Lawyers Association. DPS also sent an alert for employees at the state capitol to remain in their offices. That's the email I got, and except it wasn't from DPS. It was from Texas.
It was the building commission.
Building commission, yeah. That's doing such a wonderful job these days.
Don't start, Miles. Don't start. We'll only get bitter.
Aaron Reynolds, a teacher at First United Methodist Preschool, said the school has been evacuated and will be closed for the rest of the day. This is yesterday.
We're currently undergoing a colossal game of musical chairs at our workplace.
This is so strange, though. I'm curious. This other one, this was a K-View earlier. This is actually, I guess, is this... This may be a separate incident. Chief, standoff was suicide by cop attempt. Maybe this is the same thing. By Melissa McGuire, KBU News. Austin police say a suspect who barricaded himself in a southeast Austin apartment then pointed a rifle at officers was trying to pull off an attempt of suicide by cop. It happened just after 4 a.m. Wednesday. Okay. Okay. Now, wait a minute. Here we go. Mm-hmm. 4 a.m. this morning. This news probably was just breaking. Somebody else close to the edge gets the idea. Either that or the two reports were just hoaxes, the phone calls. But think about it. If there's somebody else local who's on the edge and close to, you know, the breaking point, and they see this news report locally here, you know, I mean, this must have been, I bet this was covered on the 6 o'clock news. I can't play this for y'all, folks, but there's a video clip at this KVU.com location.
That, I'm guessing, is our new chief of police.
The article basically says it happened just after 4 a.m. Wednesday. Police blocked the streets and evacuated residents at the Rosemont at Williamson Creek apartment complex. Quote, they woke us up at like 4 a.m. and told us to get out really fast, said residents Estefany Priego, who lives next door to where the incident happened. Police say a man carrying a handgun forced his way into an apartment. They identified him as Carl Lewis Lightford, 37. They say he knew the woman living there. Neighbors say she's a manager at the apartment complex. Investigators believe this was a domestic dispute. Upon opening the door to come outside to speak with him, he forced his way into the location with a gun in his hand, said police, Austin Police Chief Art Acevedo. The woman and her husband escaped unharmed and called police. Officers negotiated with Lightford for 5 hours, trying to get him to surrender. Police knew he had access to weapons owned by the couple who live at the apartment. At one point, the suspect came out with a high-powered rifle with a scope. Acevedo says the man stood on the balcony and pointed the rifle at police. That's when SWAT officer James Alexander fired 2 shots, striking the man once in the shoulder. I heard 2 shootings. I know they shot him in the arm, said Priego. All indications are that this was a suicide by cop situation. Article goes on for a little bit more, but that's very, very interesting. I'm glad the man wasn't killed. I'm assuming he's in okay condition. I'm glad that nobody died. I mean, seems like such a rare situation where a SWAT team member doesn't kill somebody and actually accomplishes what they're there to accomplish. And I think largely this probably shows a lot of restraint. Considering the track record Austin Police Department has had the last few years, this is probably a good thing. That's my first suspicion that somebody close to the edge saw this. And I just hope that if that person's still out there and still... on edge, I would really hope that they would seek help and not do something so ridiculous and drastic.
If that's the case, it's also possible somebody saw somebody walking with a map case.
That's a really good point.
Obviously, the cops were taking it seriously. It's odd because there was the atmosphere that I walked through the other morning was it was like there's definitely something going on, but at the same time there was a definite feeling of it was more like combat than police work, because it was obvious the police were trying to maintain a relatively low profile. There were no sirens. I only saw the Starflight helicopter, although I did see it orbiting fairly low,
which is not unusual from where we are, because they come in low to fly into the hospital right there.
And Starflight, I could tell that there were at least 3 or 4 people in the helicopter. Yeah. So it's kind of like they were definitely out there looking around. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I think we're just about at the end here.
Holy mackerel, the hour has flown.
There was a couple more things that was this tourism cashes in on the dark side a bit there. Maybe you could read that for just a little paragraph.
Fancy a day trip to Chernobyl? What about a visit to Auschwitz? Or how about following the footsteps of Dracula in Transylvania? Welcome to the emerging phenomena of dark tourism. Miles, what I'm seeing here is a journalist on a slow day. There have been package tours of the death camps offered for years. And, well, Chernobyl wasn't a place that, you know, you really could visit for any reason until the damn thing fell apart.
I mean, this isn't like, you know, hey, like, go hunting for Bigfoot or, hey, go hunting for ghosts. But and I certainly know that there's been, you know, that kind of haunted tourism, but I thought you might get a kick out of that. This is from utalkmarketing.com. Surprise! It's probably basically one of those.
It mentions a show which airs. it mentions a show which airs on the Travel Channel. Most Haunted. The company was formed 4 years ago on the back of the popular living TV show Most Haunted. The program has been one of the channel's most successful and sees Yvette Fielding, one time of Blue Peter, I'm guessing that's a band, and psychic Derek Acura carrying out a series of paranormal experiments. If you've never seen Most Haunted, well, let's just put it this way. My wife watches Ghost Hunters, not quite religiously, but fairly diligently every week, and she can't abide Most Haunted. But anyway, I find it an amusing contrast to Most Haunted. Are we fading?
Yeah, this is the end of the show.
Well, then, you know, I'll just sort of fade into the ether. 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 And tell you all to tune in again next week. Check out our website, precognitivedissonance.com.
Live from Anomaly Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the dream time.
Keep watching the skies.
Like nothing I've ever seen. The body of the thing looked to me like a circle. I could see its pattern on the bottom of it, but it looked like some type of hieroglyphics.
schools have been studying pencil.